Hello, everyone. This is Paige Hattie with Reliability Connect, and today I'm sitting down with Josiah Carter, who is a reliability engineer at Advantage Reliability Services. In his current role with Advantage Reliability Services, Josiah uses pump performance testing, vibration analysis, infrared analysis, ultrasonic leak detection, and IIoT remote condition monitoring to identify equipment liabilities and provide reliability-oriented predictive maintenance recommendations. Earlier in life, Josiah grew up as a child of a missionary couple in rural Africa, which taught him equal parts resourcefulness and outside-of-the-box thinking, in addition to forcing a high value on integrity and helping those who lack the resources or knowledge to help themselves. I'm looking forward to speaking with Josiah today about remote condition monitoring and also how he is ingeniously using his 3D printers to make a difference during this COVID-19 pandemic. All right, Josiah, how are you doing today?
I'm doing very well. It's a beautiful day over here in Beaumont, Texas.
Nice. Awesome. How is it warm over by you right now?
Yes. Yes, it is.
Summer, pretty much?
Mm-hmm. Yep. It's not quite the height of summer, so it's still, you know, relatively pleasant. It's in the low, I think, mid-80s right now.
Okay.
I'm not really certain.
Not too bad. We're
up
in the 90s.
It's not in the triple digits yet, so I'm good.
There you go, right? That's we're comfortable until it gets to that point, so I hear you. But to get us started today, would you mind just telling us all a little bit about yourself and why you're so passionate about remote condition monitoring?
Sure. So I'm a mechanical engineer. I'm working for Advantage Reliability Services. This is a vibration analysis. It's kind of our bread and butter as a company. But I got into it from a pump servicing standpoint. I used to work for Hydro Incorporated, and then I worked for Standard Alloys locally here. That's kind of where I got into vibration analysis. And I realized that it was really, there's a lot more to it. It's a lot more useful than just every once in a while using it for some troubleshooting, which is mostly what I used it for before in the pump service companies. So you can actually, I mean, now we have these, because there's the progression of technology. We have these computers, we have all this wireless technology, all these different communication protocols that we're using, Bluetooth, Wi-Fi, there's mobile internet pretty much everywhere you go, and satellite internet if there's not mobile, if you're out in, like, you know, West Texas oil fields or something. And so trying to look at, like, industrial technology like that and trying to keep it moving at pace with the rest of our communications technology, it's just sort of, right now we're just sort of in a blind charge forward with that. It's an astounding pace that that's moving. And realizing that there's really better ways to do what we do than maybe there were 20 years ago. And one of the big ways that we have for that is this remote condition monitoring. So we have these little sensors we can just put on any piece of equipment, fans, motors, pumps, turbines, pillow block bearings for, you know, conveyor bearings. It doesn't really matter. Anything that you would want to actually look at the vibration of those from. And I think the demand for that is actually going to skyrocket now because of this whole COVID-19 thing. But that's, I guess we can talk about that a little bit later. But just how useful it is that you can have these on there. And you no longer, you know, up to recently, pretty much the best you could get was you'd have a guy walking around with a magnet accelerometer. And he would walk from machine to machine, and he would take his route and move through a plant and sort of work his way through the unit and over to the other end of the plant. And then he would go back and he'd do his data analysis. And maybe every month you'd have a little snapshot of how that piece of equipment was doing at that particular moment, whether that's load conditions or bearings or, you know, whatever it is that you're really watching. But now that we have these sensors, you know, it's a machine, and unlike people, machines never sleep. Or they never need to sleep. So we can put these on there, and then they'll just be, if you want it to, you can even have it continuously monitoring, or every hour, every half hour. There's not really a minimum limit to how often you get it, although most, just for the sake of battery life, most sensors that you get now have a minimum of 10-minute intervals. But they're pretty much always at some level, just like your phone, it's always slightly awake. So if those, in case of vibration, if those levels increase suddenly, you'll get a notification on your cell phone or by email or however you choose to do it. So you can immediately look at that, and you don't have to wait for an extra month for that vibration tech to walk around and take his monthly route again. You're going to know that moment, and if it's, you know, if it's an urgent problem, you can go and take care of it and shut it down, whatever you need to do, right then and there, instead of having to wait for something to catastrophically fail. So it's a really good way to avoid any kind of unnecessary downtime. You can also use it to monitor your quality of your process. So, you know, in the case of like wood and pulp, you know, if you're running a rougher product through there or something, you'll see those vibrations come up. You can see fans as they progressively get more and more dirty. They need to be cleaned out. And you can see those vibrations come up. And even though it hasn't hit that threshold for a maintenance concern, you also know that you have, you know, a lot, it is because of the buildup of tar, pitch, particles, whatever it is that you're processing, you know that you have less throughput. And so your product quality is going to decrease. So you can just kind of, the next moment you get, if you have two of them, you can shut one down while they service that one, or the next down day, just clean that out and get a higher throughput, even though maintenance-wise, there's not even a concern yet. So I don't know if that's answered your question or not. I feel like I kind of went on a little bit of a tangent there. But
no, you're good. It gave us some really good background. So then all of that being said, then, Josiah, if we were to take, you know, continuous monitoring versus periodic monitoring, what would you say are the key differences, and what have you found is maybe more the path that people take, and maybe then what they could be doing to improving their program?
Well, the biggest thing, because there's a lot of plants out there that still don't do any kind of monitoring, whether it's continuous or periodic. So the biggest thing is those plants need to start doing something. The implementation cost for continuous monitoring versus periodic monitoring is really not bad. So from a cost standpoint, there's not really, in the end, it comes down to manpower, really. The difference between them is really, well, for periodic monitoring, where we're still, you know, the technology for continuous monitoring is still progressing, whereas periodic monitoring has been there for a long time. We're still, you know, it's still increasing incrementally as well. But not nearly as quickly as the condition monitoring, or the continuous monitoring rather, which is kind of catching up. So at the moment, you can get much higher quality of data with periodic, just with a guy walking around with a handheld FFT data analyzer, compared to the remote ones. The advantage of the remote units, though, is that you can put those on there and you have a continuous stream of data, and you don't have to. No one in the world is going to have the amount of time it takes to analyze all of that data in real time, and actually look at what your frequency spectrums are and diagnose, like, is there a maintenance issue here? Are you seeing bearing faults or whatever? No one in the world will have that kind of time. That will take astronaut. And the more data you have, of course, the more time it takes to do that, which is where, you know, periodic monitoring, it's kind of a one-for-one trade-off. So you take one point of data, and you're going to look at that piece of data right after that. And then you're going to issue your report and move on to the next piece of equipment. So you're not getting as high of a quality of data with continuous monitoring. However, almost all continuous monitoring technologies that are out there, there's several different brands. I'm not going to mention them because they're not sponsors. there's several different brands, and almost all of them will actually record a full waveform and frequency spectrum. So that if you see something, you can go back and look at that data and actually analyze off of that. However, because all of these sensors are self-contained, they're battery powered, you don't want to run down that battery too quick, because there's going to be some plant technician whose job it is. He's going to have to actually walk out there and just start replacing batteries on these sensors. And if you're taking data every minute and taking the highest quality, the same quality of data that you do with a handheld analyzer, you know, Every company uses slightly different batteries, but most of them are going to be like those little 3-volt camera batteries or some equivalent to that. And they can last a good long while. Many of them will last several years, depending on your data collection intervals. But if you start taking higher quality data, higher resolution data, more often, you're going to drain those batteries a lot faster. And then you're going to have to end up spending massive amount of time just keeping track of which sensors are running out of battery and which ones are, you know, having your maintenance concerns, and it's you'll spend way too much time doing that. So to get around that, in order to preserve that battery life and make sure that, because again, they're all, it's essentially wireless technology, whether it's Wi-Fi or Bluetooth or what have you, it's all going to a single data point. And if you have all of these sensors that are all throwing in full resolution data all the time, it's like when all your kids are trying to stream Netflix at the same time, and you know, you were able to do your, you know, work or whatever at home and you're doing fine, and now suddenly there's six different people watching six different Netflix channels or something, and suddenly you can't get any communication through. It's the same thing with these sensors. So it's, you know, kind of the difference between like sending an email and streaming an episode of Friends or whatever show you're watching. So it'll, you know, in the interest of your data integrity and actually having a constant stream of data, you're going to actually want lower, not poor resolution, but not as high of a quality. And then you'd have an actual person go out with your handheld monitor. If you see anything that concerns you, you'd then go and take your high resolution measurement to actually do your diagnosis. So it saves you a lot of time, so you're not actually walking out there and spending a bunch of time on equipment that does not need attention. But it is not an end-all, be-all. And there's a lot of maintenance concerns that you can't really see very well with those reduced resolution sensors. For instance, if you have a very noisy process, the odds of being able to correctly diagnose a bearing fault in that is very low, because there's so much other noise going on in that spectrum, it's just going to hide it in that low resolution spectrum that you're looking at. And it might be a bearing, or it might just be, you know, the piece of equipment next to it with the, you know, for instance, in a plywood mill, you know, you have these hammer hogs that just basically hammer the bark and crush it up, and they can either burn it in their boiler unit or send it out for like landscaping mulch or something. And those things are extremely noisy, and there's all kinds of non-synchronous energy in there, which is what usually cues you that there's a bearing issue. Although, again, not always, there's a lot to it. But that said, it does give you an idea. You can watch for those energy levels, and you can see them coming up in that vibration. And that tells you, you know, okay, I need to go and actually look at this thing. Or you can just look at the overall levels and say, when that reaches a certain threshold, we need to shut that equipment down and do just a physical inspection, tear it apart, take, you know, look at the bearings manually, open up the casing, check shaft integrity, check all the, you know, the fits and whatever it is, depending on your particular piece of equipment and your particular process.
All right, great. So then that being said, Josiah, what would you say to someone that comes up to you or, you know, messages you online maybe and mentions some of their working conditions and mentions that, you know, they're coming across hazardous environments more and more frequently, or even if someone's just sharing a story with you about something that they've seen, what would you say to them about, you know, remote condition monitoring and how it could help them? Or I don't know, how would you maybe advise them to be able to improve their environment?
Well, particularly in the case of hazardous environments, that's where a lot of this stuff really shines. I've been at some plants, particularly power plants, a lot of times those generators, you know, you crack the lid on a generator and you're already in it for at least $1 million. So you do not want to open those things up or do anything to them. You don't absolutely have to do it because it's so expensive. But to actually go in there and take your periodic measurements, a lot of times you're looking at, you know, temperatures of 130 degrees easily, sometimes higher. A lot of flammable vapor sometimes in some of these circumstances, or not necessarily flammable in a power generation circumstance, but a refinery or something. You can have all kinds of hazardous vapors, toxic vapors, just high pressure steam is oftentimes pretty hazardous, or just very, very high temperatures and lots of, you know, low room for maneuverability, and the equipment itself is, you know, Your boiler feed pumps are oftentimes running at about 400 degrees Fahrenheit. And while it's easy to, you know, for taking a route on a feed pump, they're almost always outside. You can just walk up and take your measurement. But if the feed water is that temperature, I mean, the rest of the boiler, unit is also that temperature. And a lot of times, it can be, although it's not always, but it can be dangerous to go and measure this equipment. And of course, for vibration particularly, you have to measure while the equipment is running. It won't tell you anything if the equipment is shut off because there's nothing turning, there's nothing producing those vibrations that you're looking for. And that's where it really shines. If you put this, you know, these remote sensors in there, you don't ever have to actually go in there. You don't have to actually be physically present. You can look at that. Or in this case, I guess kind of because of this whole COVID-19 epidemic, a lot of places, you know, almost everywhere is in, at some level you could consider it to be hazardous because of just the, you know, all the travel is being limited. A lot of plants are not allowing contractors in, but they don't have in-house personnel to be doing this. And so that's where you can also get into that kind of thing where if you have these remote sensors, we have a few plants that we're monitoring and they had completely uninterrupted service because I never have to actually show up to that plant in person until there's a problem. And then I'll go and deal with it. But I can, you know, so I sit here from my home office and I'll be monitoring all their equipment that they have instrumented. And I have their, I've got their plant maintenance manager in my phone. If I see anything, he's my first call and say, hey, I think you need to go look at, you know, your fan 123AB. I think you've got thus and such of some kind of failure condition might be building. Go out and check it out and make sure everything is still on there. Everything's good. Meanwhile, I've never actually had to expose myself with that travel or, you know, again, it just, there's a lot of circumstances where it's very, very helpful to not have to be physically on the equipment. In that regard. Now, what was that? There was another part of your question. I'm sorry, I sort of forgot what that was. What was the second
half? Good. I think you covered it pretty well, to be honest, Josiah. I mean, really, it's, you know, advising folks on what to do if they're in a hazardous environment or maybe even how to prevent, you know, even getting to that place to begin with, which I think you've done a decent job explaining.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Thank you. The other thing to really be considered in this, you know, if people are thinking about if they want to switch to the continuous monitoring or if they want to stick with route-based or which way they want to go, is your startup cost, essentially. Because every brand out there, I don't care what technology it uses or who published it or who produces it or builds it or anything like that, every single one out there, you have your sensors and then you have something that has to collect the signal. And obviously the higher the density of your equipment, the fewer collector points you'll need because it's all wireless and if you're in a physical radius of that collector point, you'll need fewer of them. But you still have to get those, so it's still somewhere that, you know, you have to put that in. Every sensor costs money. So for a lot of times, periodic base can be more cost effective for some plants. If I can go into a plant and I can read the entire plant in one day because all the equipment is relatively close together, I don't have to keep crossing the plant. I can optimize my route so I can just hit one motor and then hit the fan it's connected to and move on to the next one that's 2 feet away and move on to the next one that's 2 feet away and just walk my way around there. I can get the whole thing in one day. And then I'll go back and I'll do my analysis versus if it's a large spread out plant, it's going to take me a lot longer to do that route-based data collection. However, you'll also, in that larger plant, you'll need more collection points. And again, every sensor, and you want at least two per piece of equipment, right? One for the drive end, one for the non-drive end, or inboard, outboard, or what? There's so many different nomenclatures that different technicians will use. But at some point, if your base cost for your sensors, and it's going to vary from brand to brand, of course, but if we figure on $1,000 per sensor is not necessarily unreasonable, again, depending on your brand. Some, I think I've seen them for as low as 300, and I think I've seen some as high as like 1,800 per sensor. There's, you know, a significant cost to instrument a particular piece of equipment. And so many of these plants in their implementation strategy, they're starting out with just one end of one unit. And then because of, you know, they just kind of put in their budget every year or every quarter, whatever it is, to purchase X number of more sensors. And it can be a lot more budget friendly to do it that way instead of trying to do an entire plant all at once. It's not going to be cost effective. It's going to be an astronomical startup cost. And then it's going to take a massive amount of time for someone to actually go through and adjust all your settings for all those sensors so you're getting your optimal data, and then actually look at it and set your alarm levels. A lot of times you need to break it down into spectral alarms rather than just an overall. And it can take a very, very large amount of time to do that. But if you can break it up into sections and do, you know, this part of the plant this quarter, and then add another part of the plant next quarter, and then gradually either phase out your periodic routes, or many plants are actually opting to do both, which is kind of the best of both worlds, honestly, where that way you kind of frees up the all your sensors and you put those on your most critical piece of equipment. So, you know, your process critical turbines and boiler feed pumps and, you know, process fans that, you know, many of these, like an OSB plant, you know, you have like one fan to handle this process, and if that fan goes down, they have to shut down the entire plant. So you can get that continuous monitoring on these things. But for a lot of the other equipment in the plant that isn't as critical, you know, they have redundancy. If you have, you know, six of these hydraulic pumps in a row and you only ever run three of them at a time, if one of those pumps goes out on you, it's still, you know, not great, but you want to avoid that and see it coming. But if it does happen, you still have another two so that you can keep on standby and keep switching between them until it's convenient for you to shut down the plant and, you know, swap that one out or whatever it is that you have to do. So a lot of plants are actually opting to do both that way. And all their critical pieces of equipment, you get those, you know, that continuous effect on it. So you're always watching in case something happens, but then you can also go and measure it by hand and get your high resolution data. And now you have both the, you know, every 10 minutes or 15 minutes or hour or day or whatever it is you want. And your very high resolution, high quality data that's once a month. And you can look at, you know, specific non-synchronous frequencies in there that you might not be able to otherwise see with those sensors.
Awesome. And so, Josiah, I kind of want to switch gears on you a little bit. So you mentioned something that I think our listeners may find really interesting before we got started here today, which is that you have a 3D printer in your office and you're using it to create something really cool and special given these current times that we're in. Would you mind just kind of elaborating and sharing with the listeners what you've got going on there in your office?
Sure. I have a. Actually, I started out doing 3D printing as more of a hobby than anything else, and then I found a way to kind of incorporate that in what we do as a company and using it to sort of we build our own sensor kits, and so I print my own brackets and whatever else to hold your various components of the sensor kit, and found that to be a very good use of it. However, when the COVID-19 pandemic hit, I found that I still had this printer and I wasn't really going to a lot of plants because almost all these plants don't want new people coming in. And once you have your sensor kit installed, it's there. You don't need to make another one. So I had this thing that was just kind of sitting here on my desk. And I realized I could just be using it and some of this plastic to be printing some of these respirators for emergency personnel and medical people. You can actually reuse them. They're fully reusable. You can just sanitize it with just wipe out the inside of it with an alcohol wipe or some bleach or sani wipe or whatever it is you choose to use. And then you can just use, instead of doing an entire mask for your whole face, you just use a small patch of that filter. So you can even take it, if you were using surgical masks, I know a lot of hospitals have been kind of rationing those, but you can take one surgical mask and instead of using that surgical mask way longer than it was ever intended, you can cut it up into little squares that fit these respirators and just put that in there. And now that one mask will last you 6, 8, 10 times as long, depending on how large the mask was to begin with and how much material you harvest out of it. Or like a residential like HEPA filter for like an air purifier. Those have really good material in them, and they're actually slightly more efficient than an N95 respirator. So it's actually a little bit better than that, although not, again, it's a HEPA rated, it's not necessarily medically rated, but in these times, it's sort of, you know, everyone's sort of using whatever they can get. So I've started printing these, and then I mentioned to some people, and I had some people kind of, they liked the idea, so they donated. So actually over in the other end of the house, I have another 4 printers, so I have a kind of a little small print farm going here, just cranking out as many of these respirators as we can make. They're actually very cheap to do. They takes a little bit of time. I can only produce about, I print them in batches of 3. So I do 3 at a time, and each print takes about 19 hours to complete. So that works out to 6 and some change hours per respirator. But the material cost is very, very low. My material cost is about $2 and some cents for 1 respirator, and then an average, I guess, 2.5 filter patches per respirator. So I usually do them in like batches like 20 or something, and then 50 patches to go for those respirators, and then I sort of leave it up to whoever's receiving the respirators to source their own filter material. I'll explain, you know, I'll tell them, walk them through like where to get the material from and how to cut it up, because it's very, very simple. You're just cutting little squares, which is a pair of regular office scissors is enough.
That's amazing, Josiah. It's really cool what you're doing there, and so nice that it's able to really help out people given these times that we're in. But all of that being said, is there anything else you'd like to add before we wrap things up for today?
I guess because I'm doing this and I'm employed by Advantage Reliability, I guess it would be worthwhile to state our website if anyone listening to this is interested. You can reach us at advantagereliability.com is our website, and you can kind of reach us through that site, put an inquiry, and we'll kind of, you know, our goal as a company is not necessarily, although everyone's in business to make money, we wouldn't be doing this if there's no paycheck involved. However, we kind of differ from a lot of the larger companies in that our goal is really to do what's best for our clients and help them to run smoother and run better. And a lot of times people will come to us and they'll inquire about a service that's more expensive or more in detail or involved than what they really need and will cost them extra money. And we'll, you know, of course they insist and they want us to, we're happy to provide that. But a lot of times we'll actually tell them, look, what you really need here is just, you know, you're trying to plant petunias with a backhoe here. Just use this little garden trowel. Just, you know, here's what you actually need for your service, and it's going to cost way less than what you're actually asking for, which it might not be necessarily great business sense. A lot of times, if someone wants to give you money, you should usually accept it. But our goal is really, it's really to actually do to help these plants run better. And while we do that, we also make money. But if we're doing that by basically dishonest behavior, trying to sell people things they don't need, I can't speak to whoever's listening to this, but for myself and for those I can't speak for in my company, you know, we are all very religiously minded, strong believers, so we believe that it really is, it's more important to do right than it is to get rich. And so this is just one of the ways in which we're able to kind of offer help to people that need it, and, you know, a lot of times they don't know they need it, but it actually ends up being, you know, massive savings over the course of the project. So if they're interested, again, advantagereliability.com. We have an office up in Bossier City, Louisiana, and then one in that I'm out of in the Beaumont area in southeast Texas.
Nice. Perfect, Josiah. And I mean, well put. I mean, integrity is such a key part of reliability and a reliability program. So the two go hand in hand very nicely, and you guys are doing awesome things. So thank you so much for taking the time and sitting down with us today. Hopefully we can sit down and talk again in the future. I'd love to see what you're printing, you know, 6 months from now, hopefully something different.
I hope I'm not still doing respirator. I really hope this whole thing ends and goes away and you move on to the next thing.
I hope so too, but it's awesome that you're able to help in that regard too. But definitely keep in touch, and thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us today.
Thank you very much.